This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of scapular winging from the shoulder and elbow section on orthobullets.com. Scapular winging is a dysfunction involving the stabilizing muscles of the scapula, resulting in imbalance and abnormal motion of the scapula. With respect to types of scapular winging, this is defined by the direction of the superomedial corner of the scapula. Medial scapular winging is a dysfunction of the serratus anterior, which is innervated by the long thoracic nerve. Again, medial scapular winging is a dysfunction of the serratus anterior, which is innervated by the long thoracic nerve. This manifests as weak protraction of the scapula, as well as excessive medializing scapular retraction, which is caused by the rhomboid major and minor, as well as excessive elevation, which is caused by the trapezius. Again, with respect to the etiology of medial scapular winging, it's caused by dysfunction of the serratus anterior, which is innervated by the long thoracic nerve, and manifests as weak protraction of the scapula, as well as excessive medializing of scapular retraction, which is caused by the rhomboid major and minor, as well as excessive elevation, which is caused by the trapezius. With respect to the epidemiology of medial scapular winging, this is typically seen in a young athletic patient and is more common than lateral scapular winging. Lateral scapular winging is a dysfunction of the trapezius, which is innervated by cranial nerve 11, otherwise known as the spinal accessory nerve. Again, the etiology of lateral scapular winging is a dysfunction of the trapezius, which is innervated by cranial nerve 11, otherwise known as the spinal accessory nerve. This manifests as a weak superior and medializing force on the scapula, as well as excessive lateralizing of scapular protraction. This is caused by serratus anterior, pectoralis major, and minor. With respect to the epidemiology of lateral scapular winging, this is usually iatrogenic, and the patient usually has a history of neck surgery. Now, let's go over some relevant anatomy. Specifically, we'll talk about the scapulothoracic articulation, stabilizing muscles, and the nerves. With respect to the scapulothoracic articulation, keep in mind that this is not a true joint. The scapula is attached to the thorax via ligaments at the acromioclavicular, or AC joint. A suction mechanism is created by the serratus anterior and subscapularis, which holds the scapula closely to the thorax. This allows scapular movement against the posterior rib cage, and this contributes to glenohumeral joint positioning and mechanics. With respect to stabilizing muscles, the scapula serves as an attachment site for 17 different muscles. This functions to stabilize the scapula to the thorax, provide power to the upper limb, and synchronize the glenohumeral motion. Some of the important stabilizing muscles include the serratus anterior, the trapezius, rhomboid major and rhomboid minor, as well as the levator scapulae muscles. With respect to the serratus anterior, this originates from ribs 1 through 8 and inserts on the anteromedial border of the scapula. There's a total of 7 to 10 slips. The serratus anterior's primary motion is scapular protraction, which is responsible for anterior and lateral motion. Again, the primary motion for the serratus anterior is scapular protraction, specifically anterior and lateral motion. The serratus anterior is innervated by the long thoracic nerve, which comes from the ventral rami of C5, C6, and C7. With respect to the blood supply of the serratus anterior, superiorly this comes from the long thoracic artery, and inferiorly comes from the thoracodorsal artery branches. There are three parts of the serratus anterior that have different functions. The upper portion is responsible for downward rotation with the glenoid down and stabilizes the superior scapula. The middle portion is responsible for scapular protraction, and the lower portion is responsible for upward rotation and abduction. The trapezius originates from the medial third superior nuchal line, external occipital protuberance, and nuchal ligament and C7 to T12 spinous processes. It inserts on the lateral third of the clavicle, acromion, and scapular spine. The primary motion of the trapezius is upward rotation and elevation of the scapula. Again, the primary motion of the trapezius is upward rotation and elevation of the scapula. It is innervated by the spinal accessory nerve, otherwise known as cranial nerve 11. There are three parts to the trapezius, each with different functions. The upper portion of the trapezius is upward rotation and elevation. The middle portion of the trapezius is responsible for scapular retraction and adduction. The lower portion of the trapezius is responsible for downward rotation and depression. With respect to the rhomboid major and rhomboid minor, the rhomboid major originates from T2 to T5 spinous processes and inserts onto the medial scapular border just below the insertion of the rhomboid minor. The rhomboid minor originates from C7 and T1 spinous processes and inserts onto the medial scapular border near the base of the scapular spine. The primary motion of the rhomboid major and rhomboid minor is scapular retraction. And keep in mind that these muscles are innervated by the dorsal scapular nerve. Finally, the levator scapulae muscles originate from the C1 to C4 transverse processes and inserts onto the medial border of the scapula at the level of the scapular spine. The primary motion of the levator scapulae is elevation of the scapula and downward rotation to tilt the glenoid cavity inferiorly. The levator scapulae is innervated by the C3 to C4 cervical plexus with contributions from the dorsal scapular nerve. The specific nerves to be aware of include the long thoracic nerve and the spinal accessory nerve, otherwise known as cranial nerve 11. The long thoracic nerve arises from the ventral rami of C5, C6, and C7. With respect to anatomic variations, C4 has contribution in 13% of patients, and an absence of a C7 contribution occurs in 8% of patients. The long thoracic nerve travels posterior to the axillary vessels and brachial plexus, and it runs superficially to the serratus anterior, giving branches to each slip. The crow's foot is the point where the long thoracic nerve intersects the most dominant and inferior serratus branch of the thoracodorsal artery. Moving on to the spinal accessory nerve, again otherwise known as cranial nerve 11, the spinal and cranial portions join to form the accessory trunk. The accessory trunk traverses the jugular foramen, crosses laterally over the internal jugular vein to innervate the sternocleidomastoid. The spinal accessory nerve enters the posterior triangle of the neck to innervate the trapezius. Now, let's talk about medial scapular winging in a bit more detail. With respect to the pathophysiology of medial scapular winging, this is from a deficit in the serratus anterior function due to injury to the muscle itself or to the long thoracic nerve. Again, the pathophysiology of medial scapular winging is a deficit in the serratus anterior function due to injury of the muscle itself or to the long thoracic nerve. As far as the mechanical etiology of medial scapular winging, this can be from a traumatic avulsion of the serratus anterior or displaced fractures of the inferior pole of the scapula. With respect to a neurologic etiology of medial scapular winging, this can be from a traction nerve injury, a compressive nerve injury, direct nerve injury, or a neuralgic amyotrophy, otherwise known as brachial neuritis. With respect to a traction nerve injury, greater than 50% of the cases of medial scapular winging are a result of a traction nerve injury. Repetitive stretch injury is the most common. In this case, there is a gradual onset of weakness and winging, and there is an increased risk with the head tilted away during overhead arm activity, repetitive throwing, and/or prolonged abduction. This can be seen in weightlifters and volleyball players. A traction nerve injury can be an acute injury with immediate winging in cases of high-energy trauma, for example, in the setting of a motorcycle accident. A compressive nerve injury can be acute or chronic. Acute compressive nerve injuries are a result of a blunt trauma to the chest wall, head, or neck. This can be seen in contact sports or motor vehicle accidents. Acute compressive nerve injury can also be seen with sudden depression of the shoulder girdle, for example, in the case of a fall. In the setting of a chronic compressive nerve injury, sites of compression include the scalene muscles, subcoracoid between the coracoid and the first or second rib, for example, when a person carries heavy objects on the shoulder. Other sites of compression can be inflamed bursa, specifically the subcoracoid, subscapular, accessory, and supracoracoid bursa. Finally, the antero-inferior scapular border can be another site of chronic compression. Direct nerve injury can be iatrogenic or from a penetrating injury to the chest wall. In the setting of an iatrogenic direct nerve injury, 10% of patients had prior surgery. Iatrogenic nerve injury can also be seen in a radical mastectomy / axillary lymph node dissection, thoracic surgery, or a chest tube placement for pneumothorax. Neuralgic amyotrophy or brachial neuritis presents with isolated unilateral palsy of the long thoracic nerve in 22% of patients. Consider this diagnosis in patients without clear traumatic onset and with antecedent immunological insult and/or inflammatory response. As far as the presentation of medial scapular winging, patients may have vague, nonspecific shoulder girdle pain and fatigue, specifically at the base of the neck, scapula, and deltoid. They may also have muscle spasms, weakness when lifting away from the body and overhead activity, discomfort sitting against a chair. Patients may also have neurologic symptoms due to traction on the brachial plexus, and patients may have symptoms of subjective shoulder instability, and this is secondary to failure of the scapula to provide a stable platform for rotation of the glenohumeral joint. As far as evaluation of medial scapular winging, physical examination may reveal that the inferior medial scapula elevates and protrudes posteriorly and medially. This is worsened by forward arm flexion. Physical examination may also reveal abduction, which is often limited to 90 degrees or less, weakness of forward arm flexion and abduction, wasting of the anterior scalene triangle, which is due to atrophy of the sternocleidomastoid muscle, and finally, with respect to scapular stabilization, manual stabilization of the scapula often improves pain and increases flexion and abduction. Diagnostic studies in the setting of medial scapular winging include electromyography, which helps assess involvement of the long thoracic nerve versus a mechanical cause of winging, for example, a serratus anterior avulsion. Treatment of medial scapular winging can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes observation, physical therapy, and activity modification. And as far as indications, you will typically observe for a minimum of 6 months, ideally 18 months to 2 years, and wait for the nerve to recover. As far as specific non-operative techniques, physical therapy should be directed at serratus anterior strengthening and stretching. Make sure to avoid painful or heavy lifting activities, and bracing with a modified thoracolumbar brace can be considered. However, there is usually poor compliance and little benefit. With respect to outcomes, the majority of patients will spontaneously resolve with full return of shoulder function and resolution of winging by 2 years. Operative options include early repair of the serratus anterior avulsion, neurolysis of the long thoracic nerve, muscle transfer, specifically a split pectoralis major transfer, nerve transfer, or scapulothoracic fusion. With respect to early repair of the serratus anterior avulsion, this is indicated when there is a mechanical disruption of the serratus anterior muscle from an avulsion and or its insertion, which occurs in inferior pole scapula fractures. This is indicated when there is mechanical disruption of the serratus anterior muscle in the setting of an avulsion and or its insertion, such as inferior pole scapula fractures, with symptomatic winging, and these patients should undergo surgical repair acutely. With respect to neurolysis of the long thoracic nerve, this is indicated when there's failure to improve with conservative treatment for at least 6 months, and when there's electromyography with signs of nerve compression, specifically distal latency and denervation. The technique involves supraclavicular decompression as the nerve traverses the scalene muscles. With respect to outcomes of neurolysis of the long thoracic nerve, there is excellent improvement in pain and resolution of winging in patients who failed non-operative management, and this is seen in approximately 98% of patients. There is also better improvement in shoulder strength, specifically flexion and abduction, compared to muscle transfers. Speaking of muscle transfers, specifically a split pectoralis major transfer, this is indicated when there is failure to improve with conservative treatment for 1 to 2 years. Other indications include pain relief and improved shoulder function with manual scapular stabilization. A split pectoralis major transfer from the sternal head is the most effective, and this can be done with or without augmentation with a fasciolata or hamstring graft. Other transfers may include a pectoralis minor transfer or a rhomboid transfer. As far as outcomes, the predictor of successful surgery is symptom relief and improved function with preoperative manual scapular stabilization. Often patients have persistent shoulder abduction weakness. Complications can include failure of the pectoralis muscle transfer attachment at the scapula, unsatisfactory cosmesis, specifically breast asymmetry in women, infection, and/or adhesive capsulitis. With respect to nerve transfer, this is a developing area in the microsurgical field. The technique involves the lateral branch of the thoracodorsal nerve to the long thoracic nerve, or a medial pectoral nerve with a sural graft to the long thoracic nerve. With respect to outcomes, nerve transfer has been shown to successfully reinnervate the long thoracic nerve, and keep in mind that there's a benefit of preserving proper muscle biomechanics. Finally, with respect to scapulothoracic fusion, this is indicated when there is scapular winging from diffuse neuromuscular disorders. It's also indicated in failed muscle transfer surgery. However, it is often not the first surgical treatment of choice, and the primary goal is pain relief. The technique of a scapulothoracic fusion involves fusion of the anterior scapula to the posterior rib cage with wire cables and/or plates and screws. As far as outcomes, there is a limited increase in shoulder motion after a scapulothoracic fusion, with approximately a 20-degree gain of abduction. Recent studies show high satisfaction levels in 82% of patients at 5-year follow-up. Complications include non-union, pleural effusion, adhesive capsulitis, and/or symptomatic hardware requiring removal. Now moving on to lateral scapular winging, The pathophysiology involves a deficit in the trapezius function due to injury to the spinal accessory nerve, otherwise known as cranial nerve 11. The pathophysiology is typically neurologic in etiology and can be either iatrogenic or traumatic. Iatrogenic is the most common, and keep in mind that patients are vulnerable in the posterior triangle of the neck, so specifically in cases of cervical lymph node biopsy or radical neck dissection. Traumatic etiologies may include traction injury, blunt trauma, or a penetrating injury to the neck. Traction injury specifically involves a sudden lateral flexion of the neck, for example, in a motor vehicle or motorcycle accidents. Blunt trauma may even include a deep tissue massage. Presentation of lateral scapular winging is similar to medial scapular winging, so symptoms are vague, nonspecific shoulder girdle pain and fatigue, muscle spasms, weakness with overhead activity, discomfort sitting against a chair. Patients may have neurologic symptoms from traction on the brachial plexus and subjective shoulder instability from failure of the scapula to provide a stable platform for rotation of the glenohumeral joint, as well as shoulder impingement, specifically from inferior translation of the coracoacromial arch as the scapula depresses secondary to loss of the trapezius. As far as evaluation of patients with lateral scapular winging on physical exam, you may notice that the superior medial scapula drops downward and protrudes posterior and lateral. Again, on physical exam, in the setting of lateral scapular winging, you may see the superior medial scapula drops downward and protrudes posterior and lateral. This is worsened by arm abduction and resisted external rotation. Also on physical exam, you may notice that the shoulder girdle appears depressed or drooping. There may be also an asymmetry or visible atrophy of the ipsilateral trapezius. There may also be weakness of forward arm flexion and abduction. And finally, with respect to scapular stabilization, manual stabilization of the scapula often improves pain. As far as diagnostic studies in the setting of lateral scapular winging, electromyography again helps distinguish isolated spinal accessory nerve injury from other more extensive neurologic injuries. Treatment of lateral scapular winging can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative options include observation, physical therapy, and activity modification. As far as indications, the role of conservative management is controversial, given that most injuries are iatrogenic direct nerve injuries and warrant surgical intervention. Elderly and sedentary patients and those without an identifiable injury should be initially treated conservatively. As far as outcomes of non-operative management in the setting of lateral scapular winging, predictors of a poor outcome with conservative management include the inability to raise the arm above the shoulder at presentation and dominant extremity involvement. Operative options include exploration of the spinal accessory nerve, neurolysis and repair, muscle transfer, specifically what's known as an Eden-Lang transfer, and scapulothoracic fusion. Indications of an exploration of the spinal accessory nerve, neurolysis and repair is identifiable nerve injury that is diagnosed early. With respect to the technique, this should be performed within 20 months of the injury. As far as an Eden-Lang muscle transfer, this is indicated when the nerve injury is diagnosed late that is greater than 20 months from the injury. And as far as the technique, this involves transfer of the levator scapulae and rhomboid muscles from the medial border of the scapula to the lateral border to effectively reconstruct the trapezius. Finally, scapulothoracic fusion has the same indications as we previously discussed in the setting of medial scapular winging. But to quickly review once again, the indications for scapulothoracic fusion is scapular winging from diffuse neuromuscular disorders and failed muscle transfer surgery. The primary goal of a scapulothoracic fusion is pain relief and is often not the first surgical treatment of choice. The technique involves fusion of the anterior scapula to the posterior rib cage with wire cables and or plates and screws. With respect to outcomes, there is a limited increase in shoulder motion with approximately a 20-degree gain of abduction. Recent studies show high satisfaction levels in 82% of patients at 5-year follow-up, and complications can include non-union, pleural effusion, adhesive capsulitis, and or symptomatic hardware requiring removal. That's all for this review about scapular winging. Because this is a relatively lengthy topic, look out for a separate episode completely dedicated to questions about scapular winging, and hopefully this episode will have prepared you for that question review session. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.